You're listening to a podcast from 702.
I mean, there's small little items in the news cycle that you go, I blinked and I've missed what's going on here. And I just can't seem to get a grip on it. One of those stories appear, for me at least, to be lawfare between the Public Protector's Office and Minister Pravin Gordhan. And you can be forgiven as a political animal, but a non-legal expert to go, what is going on here? And what exactly is the Public Protector's Office wanting him to account for? And is he just being a diva, not wanting to subject himself, as he should, committed to the rule of law, to her authority, and more importantly, the authority of the Office of the Public Protector, regardless who the current occupant is? What is going on? And I hope that two interviews will help us to just be able to cut through some of that confusion and see whether you and I, after 10 minutes, can be a little bit clearer. The first person I want to speak to in that regard is the head of communications in the Office of the Public Protector, Opa Sekhwalwe. Opa, good morning, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, sir.
I'm going to ask you very basic questions, because although many of most of my listeners are sharp, if as a political analyst and as an undergrad law student I am confused, I think many people will be confused. So the first thing I want to start off with, I've got a document in front of me, which is the complaint of one Mr. Floyd Chivambu and Anonymous against the South African Revenue Services, right? And the first question that comes to my mind, just as Joe Soap, is who is Anonymous?
Well, from time to time, you said, yes, we get complaints from people who wishes to have their identity hidden because they fear that, there might be a backlash or something like that. It's similar to what you have in newspapers when you have an unnamed source. And we accept that because we think it is important to protect whistleblowers because we think they are very critical in the fight against wrongdoing in state affairs and elsewhere. So from time to time, we will get that. And then we do encourage people whenever we do roadshows to say, if you have come across any sort of wrongdoing that falls within the jurisdiction of the Public Protector, you are most welcome to bring that information to our attention. And if you fear that there may be repercussions for you if you come out in the open and report, you are welcome to report such incidences under the condition of or on condition of anonymity.
How do you assess whether their request for anonymity should be granted?
Well, we look at, first and foremost, the issue at hand. What are you bringing to the table? And one of the things that we also emphasize is that even if you are going to be anonymous, please reveal your identity to us at least. But if you are still not comfortable, it's fine, but at least give us an avenue to which we can communicate with you, because sometimes you get a vague complaint, and when the anonymous complainant is unreachable, we end up closing the file because we have no way of engaging with them to establish exactly what is it that they meant. So all the incoming complaints are subjected to a standard process of assessment, where we look at whether or not we have jurisdiction first, and second, we look at the merits of the complaint, whether or not it's something worth pursuing and so forth. And where we are not sure, we embark in what we call a preliminary investigation, which essentially is about ascertaining whether or not we should launch a full-scale investigation.
Okay, but I want to separate the question of the merits, I'll come to that in a second,
yeah,
from the question of having been granted anonymity in this particular case. Is this someone who currently is employed by the state? Is that the basis on which they perceive a potential backlash if their name were to be public? And is it one person or a choir of people?
In this case, it is one person. And then as far as we understand it, the person works for the government. And so they were of the view that it would be best if their identity is hidden. Because they
as
don't
far as you know, or is that established? Because if it's false, presumably their right to anonymity would not be granted.
It is established.
Were they working in concert with Floyd Chivambu, or did you guys ask them to have a meeting of the minds because they had lodged separate complaints that purely coincidentally were substantively the same?
No. Let me draw a distinction between the two issues. There is an aspect of, okay, let me put it this way. There's an investigation relating to the so-called rogue unit. And that's where Mr. Shivambu's complaint arises from. And then there's another one relating to, you know, the retirement and subsequent re-employment of Mr. Ivan Pillay. That one is separate, even though Mr. Shivambu also refers to it in his own complaint. And that particular complaint came from anonymous.
Okay, let's get on to the merits of the matter that, or the series of issues that Pravin Gordhan needs to respond to. The correspondence between the lawyers in their camp and the Office of the Public Protector really has one major premise as its beef with the Office of the Public Protector. And the key part of it, dated 16th of April from Malachi Kanyane Incorporated, is, as you know, that the issues that are the substantive issues that Mr. Gordhan has to respond to have already in other legal fora been dealt with and settled. Whether we talk about the Director for Special Criminal Investigations, as you know, that settled this issue in 2016 by declining to prosecute charges relating to materially the same complaints, as you know, OPA. Whether we talk about the Nugent Commission of Inquiry and that report to the President on the 11th of December, which also found no wrongdoing on the part of SARS and the Minister in particular in relation to substantially similar allegations. So here's the question then that the public and I want to know an answer to. If other very important, respected legal and constitutional fora have dealt with this issue and your office is incredibly busy, why do you want to re-rake the matter?
Let's start with the reference to the NPA. We have been explaining now and again that the public protector's mandate is maladministration, which you could call administrative wrongs or lapses in the administration. Whereas the NPA would have pursued a criminal matter. So we want people to be able to draw a distinction between the two, that it is possible for a criminal matter to have a life of its own, an administrative investigation. An example that I've made time and again is that, for example, tomorrow the public protector will be in Vrede in the Free State pursuing the Estina matter. She will be interacting with beneficiaries or people who are supposed to be beneficiaries in that particular project. And then shortly after that, she will line interviews and may subpoena politicians who are implicated in that matter. The NPA, on the other hand, dropped its case on the Estina case last year. But that decision of the NPA, because it was criminal, it has not impacted our own investigation here, which is continuing. So people need to be able to draw a distinction between the two. The one is criminal, the other is just maladministration.
I totally get that. So just in terms of the source of law, which particular clauses and aspect of the Public Protector Act are you therefore relying on here, just so that we have it on record and distinguish it from the sui generis criminal investigations that can happen elsewhere in the legal system? Exactly where in the Public Protector are we drawing this from? Because when I shortly speak to the attorney for the minister, I want him to be able to answer to this, because they keep making this argument that you are dealing with now. And by the way, I think you're persuasive on the point that the matter has been dealt with elsewhere. Just to be plain to the public, what source of law are you relying on here that is unique to the Public Protector? And I've got nothing to do with the Hawks or with the Nugent Commission.
The Public Protector Act, it's a pity I haven't got the copy of that law here, but the Public Protector Act itself makes it clear that the Public Protector's role is primarily maladministration. Things like abuse of power, abuse of state resources, improper enrichment, discourteous conduct between on the part of public officials with when they interact with members of the public. So it stipulates a range of those issues that constitute maladministration as opposed to criminal conduct. And then where the public, it further goes to say, where the public protector as part of an investigation comes across criminal conduct or evidence of criminal conduct, she must then defer to appropriate or competent bodies. That is why from time to time when you read our report, you will see in the remedial action where we came across evidence of criminal conduct, we would refer to the Hawks to say, take it up, open a docket and then hand over to the NPA.
Second last question to you. I have had a look at the Public Protector Act. I just don't want to put words in your mouth. I think you are chiefly relying on probably Section 11 in particular. But I want to talk about a different part of the Public Protector Act. Section 6, subsection 9, requires that where a matter that you are looking at originates in an event that is 2 years or older in terms of the date of occurrence of the particular incident that you are looking at, that you better have quote-unquote special circumstances to justify conducting that investigation. Now, I want to know, can you explain very simply, not in legalese, in plain English to the public, what are special circumstances at the level of generality, and then be very precise, what are the special circumstances in relation to Pravin Gordhan to justify departing from this ordinary requirement that you deal with issues that are not quite that far back in history?
Yes. First and foremost, that is a discretionary power that the public protector has.
But it's still subject to the legal requirement of rationality, so you have to explain it.
Yes. Now, in the case at hand, and before I get to that, let me say that the special circumstances depends on the merits of each case. Now, in the case at hand, the public protector has explained to the minister that she considered these special circumstances, and then for her, she had to look at the nature of the complaint at hand, first and foremost. Does it warrant an investigation that goes back 10 years? She had to look at the seriousness of the allegations that have been leveled against the minister. And then she had to look at whether the outcome or the potential outcome of her investigation could rectify the alleged systemic problems in this matter. She also had to look at whether she would be able to successfully investigate the matter, having considered the fact that evidence or records may not be available because of the fact that this matter took place, or the events being investigated took place a decade or so ago. And then she had to look at whether there are any competent alternative remedies available to the complainant.
Potentially.
And the overall impact of the investigation. And then having considered all of those, the public protector then decided to pursue the matter.
Okay.
So another point to make is whether she had to consider whether her refusal to investigate would perpetuate the alleged violations of the law as contained in the complaint.
A final question, and my last question meshes nicely with this letter answer that you've just given, Opa. It's a generally fascinating issue at the intersection of law and politics, however, because, funny enough, the same discretion that you're talking about that she has to exercise, and if we don't have faith in her, then we should obviously impeach her. But once we have her in office, we have to leave her alone to make a judgment call, and that will happen to many people who are Chapter 9 oversight heads. But here's the thing. The same set of facts could easily have led to the opposite judgment call. In other words, she could have said to herself, sure, the gravity of the allegations by Floyd Chivambu and Anonymous are gigantic. However, as the PP, I've got incredible faith that not one, not two, but three different other constitutional fora have already ventilated the matter. So despite the gravity of the claims by Anonymous and Floyd, I nevertheless am satisfied that it is an appropriate exercise of my discretion, particularly given that I have infamously limited resources in my office to not go ahead with this matter. What would have been wrong with that reasoning?
Well, you know, people keep referring to the other competent bodies that dealt with the matter. We've already disposed of the NPA matter. Let's deal with the Nugent Commission. When you read the terms of reference for the commission, you will see that it is confined to a certain period in time, specifically the time when the former SARS head, Mr. Moyane, was in charge. But because one of the witnesses who had to testify there insisted on talking about this, that's when the matter came to the fore at the commission. So it was never really part of the scope of work of the commission. But be that as it may, the judge did deal with that matter in his report. And people tend to quote it selectively to say that he found nothing wrong with that. But he also said something else to say, for example, and I'm quoting verbatim here, that members of the union of the unit might at times have acted unlawfully, that SARS employment policies might have been breached, that members might unlawfully have acquired and used equipment, and this would be surveillance equipment, all of which came later or to be alleged. I see no reason SARS was or is not entitled to establish that kind of unit. So essentially our focus looks at this alleged unlawful conduct, that the equipment was acquired and people's conversations, private conversations were being eavesdropped on and so forth. And so the public protector felt that she has to pursue this particular matter to settle it once and for all. And there are other competent investigative bodies that arrived at different conclusions to the ones you are referring to.
Opa, thank you for being detailed and coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
That was Opa Sekgalwe, the head of communications in the Office of the Public Protector. We'll take a break. On the other side of this, I'm going to ask Tebogo Malatsi, the attorney for Minister Pravin Gordhan, to tell me which part of Opa's reasoning he finds legally not quite to be as compelling as it sounds. Okay, joining me now is the attorney for the Minister of Pravin Gordhan, Tebogo Malatsi. Tebogo, you heard my engagement with the Office of the Public Protector. As far as I can read your correspondence, you are the legal expert, not me. But it seems to me as a layperson that your chief concern, while you've got many, but really the most important one is that there are other legal fora in which this matter or the more substantive claims have been dealt with before. But Opa is right, isn't he? That even if that is true, there are unique powers and interests that inhere in the Office of the Public Protector through the Public Protector Act, which goes to the heart of maladministration. And those are a very different set of concerns to the concerns before a judge or even a commission of inquiry.
Morning to you and your listeners. I think that is where we part ways with the Office of the Public Protector. And it is simply this. If you look at their own competencies under Section 6.4, yes, they look at maladministration, abuse and exercise of power. They look at improper, dishonest act, incidentally, contemplated under the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act. They'll look at improper and unlawful enrichment, and they'll look at any act or omission by a person in the employment of government at any level. Now, I must tell you that all of those constitute a crime in one form, shape, or another. If the set of facts are put before the Hawks and later considered by the NPA, and it is found that those facts don't constitute a crime, these which I've just set out to you, which relate to the Public Protector's Office, have a lesser level of proof than that which is required to prosecute a case in a criminal context. So we're not looking at different facts. We're not applying different laws. We're applying the same laws to the same set of facts. And we say that in that context, it doesn't make sense that there would still be consideration for this complaint to be investigated.
Tebogo, can I engage you on that point? That point is legally inaccurate. The same set of facts or alleged facts have different sources of law that are being applied to them. So when Shaun the Sheep goes in front of the public and pretends that there's a case for Minister Gordhan to answer, and then 3 weeks later he has to eat his proverbial hat, his concerns as erstwhile head of the NPA are very different to a public protector that says the very reason why the Chapter 9 institution was conceived of in the first place by the founding fathers and mothers of our constitution was precisely for me to have a different kind of look to the kind of look that the criminal justice system might have when it is being asked to look into whether it be a rogue unit or some other alleged criminal action. And therefore, the sources of law have a different object. And I'll give you a practical example of the difference. Theoretically, we'll get to motive later. It is possible, for example, as you know, for the public protector to end up saying, you know what, here is how I think as a matter of good administration, not criminal law, administrative law. Here's how I think is the best way for us to use public money prudently when it comes to early retirement, and for any commissioner, deputy commissioner or minister to never ever have a cloud over their head, I recommend the following remedial action for how to set up some really awesome principles that will increase the levels of transparency in terms of good public administration. A court of law isn't interested with that kind of remedy, and therefore, to bring it back to your argument, it is not true that the Public Protector Act has got the same set of concerns identical as that of a court of law.
Well, if you...
Do you agree with me?
No, I don't. Let me be more articulate than I was the last time. It can only be maladministration if it offends a set of laws. It cannot be otherwise, because the measure of whether it's maladministration or not, it's a set of facts applied to a set of laws. In our case, if we and I'm not suggesting, by the way, that it's my proposition is a general one. I'm just saying.
I don't disagree with that point. The only point that I'm making, which is incredibly minor, I didn't think you would disagree with it, is that some maladministration is not criminal behavior. Do you agree?
Well, that's correct. But let's go back to the facts in this case. The facts in this case is Minister Gordhan participated in the establishment of a high-risk investigation unit targeting the illicit economy. Now, the facts are common cause. They're in the public domain. The law is there. And what we are saying is, hang on, if you were to investigate the very same complaint considered by your predecessor, the NPA, applying, by the way, all of them, and the Nugent Commission, the same set of facts and the same laws, because we don't have a different set of facts. We don't. We don't have a different laws applicable to determine whether there's maladministration, abuse in exercise of power under the Public Protector Act. We're not applying different laws.
Okay, just hold that thought for me, Teboho. I'm just going to spend two more minutes with you, and then we're going to leave it there for today. But I do want to just get some clarity on your latter point. I mean, because if your argument is true, the Public Protector's Office may as well not exist. So I think you're being disingenuous here about the specific and the unique authority of the Public Protector's Office, whatever we think about the current office holder. 702. Open line. Teboho, I don't want to keep you longer than we had agreed on, but I do appreciate you being present because this is of profound national interest. But here's where I mean, a lot, look, Pravin Gordhan divides the public, and people come to this issue depending on how they feel about the man. I'm trying to be dispassionate and separate the politics out from the law. But where your legal argument to me doesn't entirely make sense, even though my instinct is to believe you, is that if your reasoning is correct, then really what it amounts to, let's be blunt about it, is that the Public Protector may as well just be deferential to the outcomes of court processes. But you know that when we designed the Public Protector's Office, like an ombud in Western Europe, we intended her to be capable of making all sorts of findings and recommendations that have a different kind of objective to what happens in a court of law, even if there's interesting overlap in some of the aspects of the legal processes. Surely you accept that?
I do, but I think we're probably at cross purposes on this. Remember the context within which we raise this issue is this, that if you must measure the same facts and measure the same law applicable in our case, right? We're not generalistic in our approach. In our case, there must be a consideration under the context of whether do I consider there to be special circumstances to investigate this matter.
Okay.
I must have regard to what other bodies have done. And it is in that context that we raise the issue that says, hang on, facts, common cause.
Yes.
We're looking at the same legal principles. Therefore, if three other authorities have arrived at the same conclusion, what is this fourth investigation about?
I asked Opa that question. What did you make of his justification?
The office arrived at the same conclusion. Sorry?
Okay. But I put that question to Opa because that's been bugging me with how the Public Protector has handled this matter. And as sharp as I am feeling this morning, I have to confess that I couldn't overreach in my questions to OPA because I thought that OPA was being quite fair. I mean, we can speculate on political and other motive going on here in the Public Protector's Office, but on the law, I thought he did a decent job to distinguish those other processes. He talked, for example, about how the Nugent Commission is cited, but often the details of the remarks that came out of that report are not looked at in detail, and it differs in scope from what is before the public protectors in relation to the complaint from Anonymous and from Floyd Chivambu, and also that the gravity of the potential allegations against Minister Pravin Gordhan are such that you can't ignore them. What did you make of Teboho? What did you make of OPA when he tried to justify a few minutes ago what is so special about these circumstances that you find him compelling?
Two things. Firstly, if you've asked him very, very interestingly, the general grounds, he set them out very well. Did you hear him speaking about specific circumstances, special circumstances in relation to this case? Not. I didn't hear that. Now, what we're questioning is, if there are no such special circumstances as prescribed by the very act that applies to the office, we've got cause to ask, why are you investigating this, which is 2007 old and has been broached by other authorities? We've asked that question. We're waiting for an answer.
Okay.
The general grounds are not sufficient. Secondly, and most importantly, Minister doesn't say that the office mustn't investigate. That we must all understand. He says she must do a job. It's a constitutional duty to do a job. And nobody, including you in the media space, must prevent her from doing a job on the premise of some allegations or some inferences or improper motives. We have no facts to suggest that. All we're saying is, when you do, please advise us. A, what are the special considerations applicable to it? And B, why must we go through a process we've gone through three times over, including her own office?
Okay.
And that's all we say.
Last,
I'm not saying she shouldn't.
I hear you, yeah. Last question, Teboho. Keep the answer to me under a minute, if possible. OPA, who is now gone, I think would say he answered the particularity of what is special about the Pravin Gordhan case and the two-year-plus time lapse by reference to the nature of the allegations against him. Do you accept that as a justification and explanation for what is special? And if you don't, can you, in simple, non-legal terms, explain to the public what kind of answer from the public protector would satisfy you as being specific enough?
I would have expected them to say, this is the additional information evidence we have, which hasn't been previously considered by other authorities. We don't have that.
Okay.
Very, as I said, facts are common cause.
Yeah.
And the law, between all us lawyers, applicable to this set of facts is the same.
Fantastic. Teboho, thanks so much for coming on.
All right. Thank you.
I was Teboho Malachi, the attorney for the Minister of Pravin Gordhan. Here's the thing, just a small comment from me. You know, I like law, and unfortunately, law has become a site of political contestation in this country. It's not new to our nascent society. I am making my way steadily through the book by Advocate Michelle LaRue and Judge Dennis Davis. I'll interview them within the next week or two, entitled Lawfare. And that intersection between law and politics matters enormously. You can't talk law without talking politics in this country. And we're now at a stage where you can't talk politics without being fluent in the most important aspects of the law, because the two are so enmeshed, for better or for worse. The last 30 minutes or so, I've tried to get clarity from the Public Protector's Office on the legal case that Pravin Gordhan needs to respond to. And obviously you heard his attorney responding. But I want to be speculative here, because you and I don't mince our words. I smell a rat. I think that even though I don't find Teboho convincing that the public protector does not have unique legal authority to investigate this matter, just because it's been settled elsewhere in the courts, doesn't mean that she can't. I think she can. But I think we've got to be honest what's going on here. The public protector's office is playing politics. I really think that is simple. And we can talk legal theory seminars till the cows come home. For an office that has got limited resources to go over this stuff again and again and again, to re-rake what is no longer fertile legal ground, is enormously worrying, especially when she's already had a checkered time in office.